We seem to have about 16 different bits of technology to switch on, so I hope they all work. Welcome. Those of you who don't know me, I'm Carol Siegel. I'm director of the Freud Museum, and it's a great pleasure to welcome so many people here to what I'm sure is going to be a very special evening. As you may well know, this is the 25th anniversary of the Freud Museum being founded, set up at the wishes of Anna Freud, and here we are in the Anna Freud Centre. But it's very rare now that we can actually hear from anyone who knew Anna or any of the Freud family in person, either in London or earlier in Vienna. So it's a special privilege to welcome Victor Ross here tonight. Victor Ross will have a fuller introduction from Michael Molnar, so I won't add to that. But I just want to thank him particularly for his generosity towards the museum over the years, both in the past, in agreeing to do tonight's talk, and also because I know that in the future he has very kindly said he will make a substantial gift to the museum of books that were in Sigmund Freud's library. So thank you for that. He's also especially asked me to remind you all, so I can do this without any embarrassment at all, that we are a small independent museum, always in need of financial support, and of course we'd be very grateful if any of you were interested in supporting us in a whole variety of ways. You could become members, and there are leaflets here. We have a forthcoming and very exciting art auction. And if you're interested in any of this, please talk to a member of staff or look on our website. But of course, the biggest support is just coming along to the museum, encouraging your friends to come along and coming along to evenings like this. As I say, I don't usually like to make a financial plea, but I was specially asked to do so. Yes. So that's it. So to tonight's event, Victor Ross, in conversation with Michael Molnar. Michael, who many of you know very well, is ideally suited to be conducting tonight's conversation. He is a Freud scholar and was previously director of the Freud Museum. He's researched and written widely on many aspects of Sigmund Freud's life and is, as I said, the ideal person to be in conversation with Victor Ross. So I will now hand you over to Michael for a more sort of detailed introduction and to start tonight's conversation, which I'm sure will be fascinating. So, thank you.
Good evening and welcome to Bits of My Life. The bit that I'm reminded of listening to the director goes back quite a long time, as indeed I do. When my mother and I moved to Berlin, she to train as an analyst and I to train to become an obnoxious adolescent, we both succeeded. She used to have a very full day, studying all day long, and then in the evening meetings, a bit like this, or in surroundings like this. And on one particular occasion, she showed me the invitation to the evening's entertainment. And I will say it first in German, in case there are some of you who understand it, and then I will translate it into English. It's funnier in German. It said, die Kastrationsangst beim Weibe anschließend gemütliches Beisammensein. And I'll translate that for you roughly into English, which is female fear of castration followed by a relaxing get-together. And this is what I hope for this evening, really. A suitable mixture between anxiety, which I put Mr. Molnar in charge of this provoking anxiety and levity, which I'm always prepared to provide. Good evening, Mr. Wolf. I saw you on television last night. There's a seat for you if you want to come closer. So, that's the spirit of the evening. Levity and fear of castration.
As I've been put in the role of anxiety, I feel a little like, I don't know, is it Laurel or Hardy? Or anyway, the one who's going to get something dropped on their heads, you know. But anyway, I'm supposed to have introduced you, but I think you've already introduced yourself. Historically, let's get to the anxious bit, the serious bit. Victor Ross is the son of Ivo Ozenfeld, who was, during the 1920s, a close collaborator with Anna Freud and had a very close friendship with her. That's the mother part of it. Now, Victor Ross is going to tell us that he's had several parallel lives. He's here as a witness and also as someone who's taken part in some of the central events of the 20th century. This is all going to come out, so I won't go any further on that. But I think we should start at the beginning, or even before the beginning, with Sigmund Freud. Now, I understand that, in fact, you might not be here if it had not been for Sigmund Freud, in effect.
Well, I think that must not be misunderstood. I think I would be here. But it is quite true that I was an afterthought as far as my parents was concerned. They lost two little boys at the end of the First World War as a result of malnutrition, which was, of course, rife in Austria in the 1918-1919. Interestingly enough, or not tragically, if you like, they succumbed to some illness which was actually caused by being properly fed for the first time after a long time. And I was the afterthought that work was intended perhaps to replace them. I can truthfully say that I didn't do that, and that I felt that I didn't do that. I felt that my parents thought I didn't do that, and that colors much of the story which you will hear tonight. As far as my awareness of Sigmund Freud, because that is how you introduced this subject, is aware.
I was thinking, actually, of his involvement in your parents' marriage.
Ah, yes. But
which might not have taken place but for him.
No, in that sense, yes, now that is, that would have been much more discreet. I wish I had thought of that.
I was wondering where you took this, you know.
I was, you see, already into sexual intercourse, whereas you were... my father attended university studying law, but that was before the First World War, in the 1907, 08, 09, something like that. But he was intrigued by the talk about Freud, and Freud indeed was lecturing at the university, and my father went to his lectures, nothing to do with his formal studies, but he was enormously interested in what Freud had to say. And when he got engaged to my mother, that's what you're thinking of, isn't it? he wrote to Freud, whom he didn't know, out of the blue, and said, what did Freud think of marriage between first cousins? Because my father and my mother were first cousins. They shared a grandfather and a grandmother. That makes them sisters, brothers. I think I should confine myself. They share the grandmother. Let's leave it at that. And Freud, unfortunately, my parents being careless of such things that I would treasure and value more than they did, my father did not keep the letter, but he told me what was in it. And Freud, who's always marvelously ready with an answer, quickly, to the point, he said, if you want to reinforce the characteristics that you and your fiancé have in common, go right ahead. And that's what they did. Yeah. Actually, I don't think he was quite right. I don't think that he reinforced, it's very difficult to reinforce the characteristics that my parents had in common, because they didn't have many characteristics in common, but that may come out during the course of this evening. That's what you wanted to hear.
No, in fact, I was fascinated to hear the other part.
Yeah.
coming to Freud, though, as I said, much of your connection with the Freud family has been via Anna Freud, but of course, you were aware of Freud from quite a young age, I believe.
Very much so. My sort of anecdotal treasure house contains the story that I'm quite sure I'm the only survivor of Freud's, among the guests at Freud's 70th birthday party. I'm quite sure that nobody is now alive who was there. That was in May.
Nobody's jumping up in the audience. There was a dispute.
1926, I was seven. There were other children there, but I know who they were and I know that they're dead. And I sort of swanned about among the adults. It's rather nice to be table high. I knew there was, of course, the analytical establishment, and I only saw the lower half of them. with analysts, quite an important part. And there were other, I mean, I won't say there was the cream of Vienna, but there were some very interesting people whom I later, some of them whom I later got to know. The names, this is going to be a problem which we're going to encounter this evening, that I will mention names in full confidence and pride that you will know whom I'm talking about, and they won't mean very much to you, or not to everybody here, but Max Reinhardt, the famous producer who will play a part later in my life. Kokoschka, the painter, was there. People came from Berlin, Zimmel, who offloaded his horrible son onto my mother, and then became a sort of brother to me. And other people of note, but of course, the psychoanalytic establishment was there. The Viennese, they came from Paris, Princess Bonaparte. They came from Berlin, as I just said, Zimmel. They came from Budapest, Ferenczi, and Rado, and all that lot. It was quite a party. I discovered, what is it called? It's a fruit, like sangria. It's a sort of mixture of fruit.
Bohle.
Bohle. Yeah, that's the German word, Bohle.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yes, and I retired with a glass under the table, and I must say it was a very happy time.
could Could we jump ahead?
Yes, please, jump.
To your last meeting with Freud.
My last meeting with Freud was actually, I didn't have many meetings with him here. He was very ill. He was also very traumatized by emigration, although he had enough people to cross it and support him. I remember actually one occasion, that was already in Maresfield Garden. He first stopped off at a hotel quite near where I live now in Medevale. It was called, I don't know what it's called, Colonnade.
It's called the Esplanade. It was called the Esplanade, and then it became the Colonnade of Isaac.
I remember there's a photograph of him arriving and going up the steps, and his grandson, the one who I described as having been brought up by my mother as a sort of half-brother, one of his grandsons in the picture, and my mother and I actually standing behind the photographer, so you won't see us. But I remember this moment when he got out of the car and walked up to his, what was then his first resting place in London. Then came one or two houses, Ellsworthy Road, where I visited him. And a very significant moment, I think, when I visited him first in Maresfield Garden, in fact, up the road where you've just come from, in the library, everything put in place by his son, his desk, his table, his Egyptian figures, and I actually went there with my grandmother, not my mother, I don't know what she was doing. Freud and my grandmother were on very friendly terms. She was a much loved figure by many. And we went to see him. And he said to my grandmother, I'm obviously translating, you can see everything is here, but I'm not here. That was something that I do remember. I don't want to give you the impression that I had frequent conversations with Freud, because I didn't. First of all, I didn't have very much to say. And second, he was, of course, ever since 1926 or 27, and the cancer of the jaw which developed, reluctant to speak unnecessarily, sometimes with greater discomfort, sometimes with less, but he waved in a sort of rather royal way when he saw me and made benevolent noises and gave me wonderful presents, wonderful, for my birthday. I didn't give him a present for his birthday, but he gave me two presents I remember in particular. One was a typewriter, a real one, all right, a child's typewriter, but the real one. I mean, we could type. And I thought, he must know I want to be a writer. I don't think he knew anything of the sort. And the other thing that he gave me was a gold $5 piece, which I can see in my mind's eye now. On one side, the bald-headed eagle, obviously, and on the other side, I don't remember. And the way I am, I sold it. I didn't sell the typewriter until much later. Very generous. His generosity was constant feature of my consciousness of him, his generosity, particularly to the women around him. And that included, of course, my mother, it included Dorothy Birmingham, and it included, indeed, Anna Freud. extraordinary presence. My mother, this was not a present, this was a symbol. My mother was one of the recipients, famously, of the ring. But you may or may not know that he distinguished his inner circle by giving each of them a ring which they wore as if they were wedded to psychoanalysis, a demanding mistress. But later this was slightly diluted. I'm sorry to say that the fact that my mother got one is an aspect of dilution, because she was not part of that. She was the inner circle as far as personal relationships were concerned, but this was not to mark personal relationships. This was marked to the founding members of psychoanalysis, and in no sense was she one of them. In fact, my mother came to psychoanalysis much, much later.
Before we go on to Anna Freud, I'd like to know what your impressions of Martha Freud were. I'm asking this because the love letters between Sigmund Freud and Anna Freud and Martha Bernays have just been published, and they sort of open out the picture that the very limited picture we had before of Martha Freud. So I'd be interested to hear what your impressions of her were.
Limited is a very good word in connection with the impression that she made. Everybody, I think, underestimated her, which is now coming out. She was a sort of, she came from Hamburg, so she was German. She didn't have that lightness of Viennese, the light Viennese touch, if I may put it that way. She was a real housefrau, busy, putting toothpaste on his toothbrush, serving coffee in the afternoon and cake, making everybody comfortable. That was both in Vienna and again in they had the means to do this here as well. She was a busy housewife. And we all thought, I don't know what we all thought, I know what I thought. I thought she was a sort of attachment, like an optional extra, a roof rack to Freud. and I have actually in my possession, this is one of the books that I will return to the Freud library one day soon, which he must have inscribed to her as a sort of engagement gift, or perhaps not, I mean, I can't be sure, but it says it's poetry, it's Heine, Buch der Lieder, very famous series of poems, and he inscribed